Hi, I'm Ryan Douglas, author of The Taking of Jake Livingston, and you're listening to the Power and Community Podcast brought to you by Art of Me.
Hey everyone, Shonda here, and I'm back with a new season of the Power and Community Podcast brought to you by Art of Me. We are into season 5. Can you guys believe it? It's been a long journey and a long road, but we are excited to start this season. This season, we're going to be focusing on authors. So normally, guys, we're focusing on filmmakers, actors, just different creatives across the spectrum, but we really want to hone in on writers this season. Why? Because without writers, there would be no stories. There would literally be nothing to film if we didn't have cool people who could use words to create imaginative lands and just, you know, outrageous things, but then also really a lot of stories that we can relate to, identify with in our lives. So today we get to talk to the amazing author, freelance writer in Atlanta, Georgia, born writer, Ryan Douglas. So welcome to the podcast, Ryan.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we're so glad that you're here. And I just want to drop something, a bomb on y'all. We are talking to a New York Times bestselling author for YA horror. That's a New York Times bestselling author. So this is big, okay? This is big for Art of Me. We talk to a lot of established people, but I'm always just shell-shocked when I get to talk to people who are doing amazing things in the world of storytelling. I also would like to be an author, so I'm just grateful to even just be touching. Well, we're on Zoom, so we're not touching, but just being in the same space as Ryan is really giving me all the vibes of like, you can do it. And y'all know that's what we're about on the Power and Community Podcast. We are about letting everybody know you can do this thing called life. Whatever you want to do, whatever you want to put your mind to, you can do it, including becoming a writer. So Ryan, let's open up the space for questions. I normally don't jump right into the art part. I kind of want to get to know you as a person. So can you tell me, what were you like as a child? Were you always a storyteller? And if not, how did you discover your love for writing?
So I was really withdrawn, and I was just talking about how I used to not speak in school and in certain like social environments. So writing was just always a thing that helped me to kind of communicate with the world. And beyond just like making sense of things and being creative, it was like, oftentimes it was the only way that I knew to speak, because I was just really shy. I was just extremely withdrawn. And I would write letters, you know, when I had to say things instead of just saying them. And it just became such a way for me to connect with the world. And from there, I just like fell in love with storytelling and started learning about how to like make it a career.
Yeah, I love that you talked about connecting with the world there, because I really do think writing is that way of connecting just as much as music is, right? Like we can listen to a song and we could totally vibe, and we may have never been through that thing, but we can feel it. And writing is another one of those art things that mimics that, that type of creativity and that type of relationship through art. Something that I actually found out from researching you, because yes, I stalked the internet to find out some things about you, is that you have another book. It's a poetry book called Boy in Jeopardy. And so I have a question, because I know The Taking of Jake Livingston, your best-selling book, is a fiction book, but this one is a poetry book. And so I wanted to know, when did you begin writing poetry? Was that your first love? And then have you ever done spoken word poetry?
My bad. I got into poetry in college by accident, because I studied theater in college and I was minoring in creative writing. And I wanted to get involved with some of the prose classes for my creative writing minor. But I had some financial struggles in college that prevented me from signing up right away when registration opened. So I just ended up having to take the poetry classes, because that's what was available after everybody signed up for the creative writing on time. And I just found that it taught me a lot about just certain techniques that I could bring to my prose too. Like it taught me how to be really illustrative with the imagery. And I think that helped for the Taking Jake Livingston as well. It taught me how to be succinct in what I wanted to say. And there's a lot of metaphor and simile. And I think that on a sentence level, studying poetry really helped me with my prose in a way that I never would have anticipated. So Boy in Jeopardy is actually a collection of poems from that period where I was taking really intense poetry classes in college and discovering, you know, poets and imitating their styles and just figuring out like my rhythm and my cadence. So poetry too is something that I used to use to express myself a lot. And eventually I just like decided to publish the poetry book. And spoken word, I did, like some of the poems in that book are meant to be spoken. And I did also get involved with that in college, because we would have, in the theater department, we would have like a variety show every Wednesday. And that's like how I kind of came out of my shell, getting on the stage in the variety show and like going to open mic nights, reading my poems. So yeah, it's definitely one of my loves in addition to prose writing.
I love how you said mimicking poets and figuring out like your cadence, because I feel like that's so much of a writer's thing. We are heavily influenced by what we read. And that's why when people say, if you want to be a good storyteller, read books and read other works, because it helps you a lot. I've also found that it kind of not helps me a little bit. Sometimes it makes me feel a little intimidated, or I just feel like, oh no, I'm ripping off somebody else's style. But there's also a way to put your own twist on it, I think. So I love what you said about that, because I definitely identify with being inspired by other people's works and using that to shape who you want to be. And spoken word will always be lit. So I'm so glad to hear that you, you've been on stage before, you know what I'm saying, kind of have been in that intimate space, because it's such an experience to hear people take words off paper and just, it's like the best feeling ever. So I'm glad to know that you've done that. I know we're talking about the taking of Jake Livingston, guys, but I totally want you to check out Boy in Jeopardy as well, because I mean, we have a multifaceted artist here, okay? Different perspectives and different flows. And so we really want to experience, I think, Ryan's artistry on the different levels that he's taken it in his writing. And now, Ryan, I would really like to move on to the taking of Jake Livingston, which, can I just compliment you on the originality of your story? I love this story. I think it's very fun. And this is for my spooky folks who like the spooky things, because this book is definitely embodying that. So if you like to be scared, this is definitely your thing. I watched the book trailers and I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it all. I was like, yes, I like to be scared. I'm like totally Stranger Things. I am into zombie flicks. I love all the things. So I was really excited to get my hands on your book. And I really want to pick your brain, because this is a really unique plot for multiple reasons. But where were you when the plot idea for the Taking of Jake Livingston was born, or just when the thought even came to you in your mind, like the first time it came to you? Where were you at? What were you doing? And what did you do about that?
Well, thank you so much for the kind words about the story. It's definitely spooky. So for anyone listening, prepare yourself. You're going to get into the experience. But I came up with the idea at a time when I had been querying or sending to agents, like that's when you like pitch to agents the stories that you have and try to get representation. I've been querying science fiction and fantasy projects. And I hadn't really started to experiment with horror until I took a writing class in college. And, you know, we were able to kind of write any kind of short story that we wanted. And at that time I had just been getting a lot of rejections on my science fiction and fantasy stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna try something different. And I started writing some horror short stories, and I wrote a short story. I think it was called Outside In or Inside Out, and it was just about this boy who was being followed around his school by this creepy person that nobody else could see. And it ended with, because a lot of my stories have had really dark, harrowing endings, because my mind just just would go to dark places. So it ended with this boy getting possessed by this ghost. And I was like, that's interesting. Like, I don't really remember why it came to me. I just kind of was experimenting with this theme of like seeing something that nobody else can, and kind of the alienation that you experience when you're going through something that nobody else knows about. So that was kind of the idea that I had. And the story was like the entry into exploring that idea of like the things that we are going through but cannot say. And in the book, actually, the dedication is for everyone fighting a silent battle, because it's still like, even through to the end of making it into a novel, that was still kind of the primary theme I was looking at. Someone wrote on that story in that class, this is so good, you should turn it into a book. And at that time, I was in between books. Like, I had some projects that just didn't really take off. And I was like, well, maybe I should try it. You know, it's an interesting concept. And I remember talking to my brother and being like, man, I don't know if I can do this publishing stuff because nobody wants to buy my stuff. But then I told him that, like, there's this concept, you know, that feels really close to home for me. It feels like something that I want to explore, just like that feeling of isolation, feeling like you can't really speak to people. Like, what happens when you're isolated? How can that turn to like pain and violence? And I just want to explore these issues, because at that time, like, also mass shootings were happening, and I was just like overwhelmed by it. And I was like trying to figure out, like, okay, what can I do within my power to like deal with the cruelty of the world? And writing was always my gift. So I just like started throwing things in. I was telling my brother, like, maybe I should just start like closer to home and just write about a boy from Atlanta, a black boy from Atlanta who has hallucinations, and, you know, write what I know. Essentially, that's what they always say, like, write what you know. And I think that's great advice, because it really does show when you're writing something that is close to your heart. And I think readers can pick up on that, because you're like putting things in that are, you know, that you're aware of, and that people might not be aware of, but that you have the authority to speak on. So that's how it came to be. And it went through a lot of versions, but I'm happy with how it turned out.
Jake is, Jake, look, I'm obsessed with the book, my bad. Ryan is already starting us off with advice for you writers. So I hope y'all writing that down or putting a mental note into writing what you know. I've heard this a billion times, but I definitely think it's true. The best work is work that comes from a place that we can identify with. And then we actually get to learn our audience. We get to learn that there are people out here who are like, oh yeah, I totally relate to that too. And those are the people who are gonna buy your book. I actually thought it was pretty cool that you talked a little bit about rejection a little bit, because I do like to go into that a little bit on the podcast sometimes. I didn't do that question today, but could you talk to us a little bit more about rejection as a writer and how you dealt with that? And what is like your mindset around it now that you're published and that your book has the notoriety that it deserves?
So I think that writing is not going to be a great career for anyone who can't handle rejection. But I also think that towards the beginning, it feels more overwhelming than it does when you've had a lot of rejection and decided to keep going. What I will say is that rejection actually never stops. I still get rejected as a writer, even though I've had my successes, you know, and I've tried all kinds of things. You know, I've tried submitting to poetry journals, and I've tried short story contests, and I, you know, querying agents and going on submission to editors. Like, I have hundreds of rejection letters. So I think that the only difference between people who, you know, are able to make it professionally as writers and people who don't is that people who don't quit at some point, you know? And it really does take this like relentless dedication, this faith that if you work on your craft and if you continue to believe in the things that you have to say, the rejections, they're gonna be there, but you can rise above that. And, you know, if you're lucky and you're like, really can like sending your work to the right places and really intentional about where you send your work, you're going to get feedback and it's going to help you improve. So about rejection, you know, I would just say, like, it's part of it, and it's not something that anyone should let stop them.
Yeah, I've heard people say that, hundreds of rejection letters that writers get, and I always thought it was like an exaggeration, but I guess it's not. I'm gonna deviate a little bit more into that. What are your feelings on self-publishing versus publishing with a publishing company?
So I think that, well, the good thing about traditional publishing is the distribution. Obviously, like, they are able to send your book to bookstores all over the country, all over the world, even, you know, you get foreign deals. But yeah, like, that's, I think, the best thing. I think that's the main reason that people pursue traditional. I think that the drawback of traditional is that it's really fickle, kind of what the editors at publishing houses respond to. And you don't really, you might just get one offer, for example, and you might not have the opportunity to say no to that if you really need to sell your book. And it might turn out that the person that you're working with doesn't actually understand the vision, and the collaborative relationship of that is, it's something where in the contracts that we get when we sell our books, the editors actually, it's their vision. Like, once the publisher owns the work, it's their vision that has to be the ultimate vision in the contract. That's what it says. It's like, you get the next, or you get a certain cut of your advance, which is called the DNA, when the editor says that the book is suitable for the publisher. So with traditional publishing, there is a certain messaging that the publisher has that they expect the authors to conform to in a certain way. And obviously, like, every individual voice is different, but you are writing for a corporation at the end of the day. And I think with self-publishing, you know, the distribution is not going to be as good, and you have to do a lot more marketing, and it's best to have like a social media presence or a network of people that know about you if you want to try to sell that. But the good thing is the creative freedom. You know, you can write what you need to write, because there's a lot of, like, when you're trying to make something mainstream, when you're trying to make something commercial, there's going to be a lot of just like suggestions that maybe will speak to more people, but might not be your intention. So for example, I like to consider Black readers when I write my work, primarily. And in YA especially, there's always this emphasis on like making it go bigger and making it broader and considering white readers. And that's just not what I think about in my creative process. And I think with The Taking of Jake Livingston, like, that book is like, it focuses on racism, but that's probably the only book I've written that focuses on racism. So it's not a coincidence that that's the one that took off. I think that's what, you know, white readers want to see. And I definitely emphasize that, because you have to really know your intention if you're trying to traditionally publish, you have to be able to defend your intention and not let the voices, because there's going to be a lot of voices, just not let the voices tarnish your work.
I mean, beautifully said. I don't even really have anything to add to that. I do think it's very interesting that you said that's what white readers want to see, because we got to be honest, the world is changing. I think in the past, people didn't want to talk about racism, gender equality, all of these things, because it was a touchy subject, right? It was political, you're trying to fan the flames. But like, now we live in a time where people really do want to see change, and they do gravitate towards that. And honestly, that is what's competing in the media right now. I mean, everywhere we look up, there's, like you said, shootings going on, racism. And I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, it's just, it seems like that's where we are right now. And so why wouldn't they want to read something that helps them put together their thoughts and their emotions through this fictional character who's living out some of the hard things that we have to live out every day? So I think that was beautifully said, what you said. Fight for your story and the things that you want to hold on to. I think sometimes people make it seem so scary that you have to go up against the industry and you have to like tell them, and then they're going to drop you, and it's just scary. But like, a writer should always stay true to the story they want to tell, like, just always, because it will never be worth it to completely compromise what you want to see your story take on. And speaking of like the world changing and what we're currently living in, our generation is challenging so many legal and cultural things that have alienated people based on race, gender, sexual identity, culture, et cetera, you name it. oftentimes we all are using our platforms to speak against those harmful boundaries. So when I think of the taking of Jake Livingston, I think not only is it spooky and cool and addressing hard conversations, but it also talks a little bit about sexual identity. And so I want to know, how do you seamlessly thread sexual identity into a story like the taking of Jake Livingston? Because sometimes people are too on the nose, right? Do you get what I'm saying? Like, sometimes you read stuff and it's like, okay, yeah, you got a point, but it's like so on the nose. It's like very just in your face, but there are ways to do it in a way that's like seamless. And it's just like, oh, I resonate with that. I identify with that. How do you feel like you were able to do that? Even identifying as a queer man yourself, how, talk to me about how that translated into this story.
Yeah, I agree that the sexuality narratives can be very on the nose. And I think that when you have a marginalized identity in YA, like when you're writing YA books from a marginalized perspective, there's a lot of pressure to make it really political, or especially with like the LGBT stuff, to focus on the romance aspect, because that, like, the sexuality and the attraction is all you become. But what I really enjoyed finding as I wrote The Taking Jake Livingston is that the sexuality aspects of Jake's life are just kind of part of his life. You know, he has a brother that he has a strained relationship with. He has a mother he has a strained relationship with. School isn't going great. He has this sixth sense that he's dealing with, and he happens to be gay, you know, and that comes into play in the story of his coming of age, and the story of finding like how to communicate with his family, how to be more assertive at school, how to stand up to his bullies, you know, being like, how to go on a date with a boy is just one of the things that comes in. And the real reason why I think that the storyline with Jake's love interest ended up being like something that didn't overtake the story, but was something that was a breath of fresh air in a narrative that is pretty dark. So when it comes in, you're kind of like, oh, it's romantic now. And you can kind of breathe and you can smile and like feel charmed by it a little bit. My editor actually told me, like, cause I had written Jake to be a straight character in the beginning, because back in the day, I sold my book like in 2018. So back in the day, we didn't have a lot of Black gay characters. And I thought that the only way that I could write a Black boy who was doing all this like cool magic stuff was if he was straight, because I thought the gay thing would be like, oh, now you have to make it like the whole thing. So after the book sold, that's when I said, no, I want this character to be gay, because that's really important. And my he didn't have a love interest. My editor was like, so is he gonna have a love interest? Because she likes romance. So I was like, that's really interesting. And I started thinking like, well, Jake is kind of like, he's kind of a goth. Like, he's just like this really withdrawn kind of like, I see dead people everywhere. He's kind of sarcastic and has this kind of like cynical, like withdrawn attitude. But I thought, like, when she said that, I thought that would add such an interesting dynamic to someone who just seems so pulled out of everything, because romance requires intention. Like, it requires you to be awake, you know? And I feel like Jake is so resigned to his life. So when he meets the boy, it's like something changes in him. And it also changes in how strong he feels in the primary plot. So I think, to answer the question like in a more simple way, It was always about his growth as a character. And when Alistair comes into the narrative, it's just another component that is on the track of Jake, like finding out who he is. And I think that's why it ended up feeling more woven into the story.
I love that. I love that. I love that. I think the biggest takeaway is, even if you are trying to portray a unique marginalized group, weaving it into the story means making it one of the many things that they're being challenged with. And I'm listening to you in my head, because I'm working on my own book right now, and I actually, sexual identity is a topic in my book too. And I'm always like, I don't want to be preachy. Like, I don't want to come off preachy. I want it to be seamless. And so I'm definitely going to take that note. Before we go to break, really quickly, I want you to let us know, do you have any book recs for fantasy and horror that you like? You have to read this if you want to be a fantasy and horror writer, or if you're just into these types of writings in general, what would you recommend us?
There's like, there's so many that it's hard to even choose. I will say that my favorite horror novel of all time is called The Troop. And it's one of the, it's not YA, it's an adult book. It's about Boy Scouts who go to a remote island and find that the island has parasitic creatures on it. And I'm not gonna say anything else about it, but it's one of those like really, it's very gruesome and it's not for the faint of heart. It's something that is, you know, sometimes a little over the top. It's very dramatic and very dark character study. But I think that for people who want to write horror, it is important to get that like really wide-ranging kind of experience with the genre, like to read the stuff that really goes far and to also read the YA stuff, which doesn't go very far at all. Because you kind of, you learn conventions of genre that way and you learn like what's been done. So if people can handle horror like that, I would say The Troop. I'm trying to think of something. If you want like something that's more like a middle grade or like younger YA, which really inspired me, I would recommend the Everlost series by Neil Schusterman. It's about ghosts and a lot of the world building, well, not a lot, but some of the world building inspired the world building for The Taking of Jake Livingston. It's about when kids die, they pass into this middle realm between the reality and the afterlife called Everlost. And they're like afterlights. And it's just about that world and the two teens they died in, or they're like, I think they're like 13, 14. They died in a car crash and are trying to figure out how to make it to the afterlife. And it's a great story. There's four books in the series. I highly recommend that as a horror for younger readers. And then the other one, the last one that I will recommend is the Cirque du Freak series by Darren Shan. Because that's another one that it's in between Everlost and The Troop in that it is also for kids, but it's a little bit darker and does a little bit more with the gore aspects than Everlost does. So those are my three.
And these are series I'm seeing, so I'm totally checking out Amazon. I'm not gonna lie, I'm totally checking out Amazon while you're listing them off to me. So the Cirque du Freak series is 12 books, y'all. So if y'all want to get lost, that sounds like something to get lost in. And the Everlost is a trilogy, so 3 books. And then if you just want to get started, ease yourself in The Troop by Robert Jackson Bennett. So check out these recommendations by Jake. Make sure you by Jake. You know what? Excuse me.
No, it happens though. A lot of people do that. So
that's hilarious.
And I think it's because the character looks like me.
Okay. Yes, exactly. And that's probably why. Okay, cool. All right. I don't feel bad anymore because this is my second time doing it, y'all. Okay. So check out these book recommendations by Ryan, okay? While we take a short break.
What's up, Art of Me fam? Shonda here, and I'm the host of the Power and Community Podcast, and I have a cool message for you. I need you right now to go head over to www.artofme.org, find our contact button, and hit donate now. That is the only way we're going to be able to continue to bring you amazing content, like talking to our filmmakers on podcasts, interviewing different communities in our publication, and then creating animations and short films. We want to continue to tell stories that are important to you. Head over right now, www.artofme.org, hit contact, and then hit donate now in order to help us fund amazing stories that are important to our communities. See you soon.
And we're back. We are talking to author and freelance writer Ryan Douglas from Atlanta, Georgia. Okay, this guy has a best-selling novel, New York best-selling novel by the name of The Taking of Jake Livingston, okay? And this story is really spooky, very cool to read, and I highly suggest you put it on your reading list for this summer. We are back, and we're going to pick Ryan's brain for a few more things, okay? One of my favorite conversations to have with writers is about procrastination, the dreaded P word. And I actually was just talking to our executive director of Art of Me, Stephanie Wahume Lassiter, about procrastination and how it can strangle you and you have to get a hold of it. Do you have any advice, Ryan, for writers who deal with procrastination? I often hear procrastination is because of lack of understanding of the story, your telling of the story, or the character's lack of goals and motivation. Would you agree with that? And if so, how do we get away from the monster of procrastination?
My headphones died. I hope that's not a problem, but it's okay. Okay. So I actually think that procrastination for me, like, it's something that, or like even writer's block, you know, not the same thing, but kind of tied together. I think that it's something that I've learned to just like sit with and allow, because I think there's a lot of writing that can happen when we're not actually writing. And there's a lot of advice out there that says you should write every day if you want to be a writer and you just need to do it. And I think, like, yeah, it is, you have to hustle to be a writer, and it takes a lot of work, as anything takes. But I think that because writing is translating life and experiences and findings, you know, we need time to just process those things. And I think there's a lot of pressure to like be typing things, but you know, when you feel like in that mood, you know, I don't think, like, I've never had an experience like in all my years of a writer where I was able to like write a book and then write another book and then just write another book and keep writing and just keep writing. Like, I need those periods to read, you know, like read what's already happened, like take stock of all this stuff happening to me, you know, like what stage am I in life? Am I able to write something worthwhile right now, or do I need to work on myself? Do I need to grow? Do I need to figure out what I need to say? So I think that, like, yes, we need to do the damn thing. Yes, we need to write. We need to have like self-discipline. That's a very important thing. But I also think that it's okay to not always have the words. That's my belief.
I love that. It takes the hustle and bustle out of this hustle culture, and I'm totally against that. I do think that life ebbs and flows, and we have to know how to rest and go and rest and go. Otherwise, we will like kill ourselves trying to always be like, I just can't identify with that stuff anymore. I used to feel so bad looking at social media and seeing people go ham, and I'd be like, man, I'm not doing what I need to do. And in some ways that was true, but in some ways I was literally trying to be something I'm not supposed to be. And I totally get you. We have to prioritize rest and reading and just figuring out who we are in between the published books or the drafts. So I love that advice. Let's talk about criticism. So that can be a hard thing to sit under. It's really hard to receive criticism when we as writers can be married to our stories, all the elements, all of the things. What is your advice for writers who may want to share their drafts with others for feedback, but may not be that great at taking criticism?
So I think that criticism is helpful. I don't think it's always helpful. And this is coming from somebody who read all his reviews when my advanced copies came out. I read, like, I was just so, cause like when you reach a milestone, like, and you, like, people are reading it, you're just like, okay, now I have to know what every single person thinks about me. And I realized that, like, some people are not critical. Like, some people are just haters, and that's okay. Like, when you get a book, like, you're allowed to hate. It's in the public domain. Like, you're allowed to hate it. You don't have to like analyze, you know, okay, like the storytelling, the scene building wasn't great there. Like, people are allowed to say whatever. But I think it's about kind of tuning into the critiques that feel helpful, that give you food for thought, and tuning out the stuff that feels like it's trying to kill you. Because there's always like both happening at the same time. Taking criticism is very, very important. I think that even readers, like even people who don't have, you know, like professional experience or whatever, people know, like when they read something, they know if they're enjoying it or not. And like, I think everybody can give criticism, And I think it's really important for authors to take it and like humble themselves. And every time I hear a criticism, even if it's from haters, I analyze it and I'm like, okay, is that hate or is there something in there that I can use? Even if it's said in a hateful way, is there something that I can use? And if not, you know, you just have to like move on. And you just have to say like, you know what? Everybody has their own opinions. Maybe that just wasn't for them. But the discernment of that, I think, is the key.
Yeah, as the old folks say, chew the meat, spit out the bones. I think that is totally good advice. There is like hateration, holleration in this dancery type stuff. And then there's actual criticism that can help you and shape you into the person you really want to be. And I love that because sometimes it is hard to read people say, I liked it, but this, and you're kind of like, what? This was a masterpiece, baby. What you mean you don't like this? But no, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I love that. Chew the bone, chew the meat, spit out the bones, but also just be aware that good criticism can take you far as a writer and help you to even write even better than your next book. And I think it's not even to say that the one you published isn't good. It's literally that like it's good in what it is, and then you get to evolve into this next person with your next adventure. And so yeah, I love that. I love everything you said. I totally think it comes with being an artist. I would never be able to be a celebrity. I would like die looking at them comments. I'm really surprised you read your comments because I would be like cringing so hard, Ryan. I wouldn't be able to do it. Okay, and then go ahead, Ryan. Go ahead, sorry.
I don't know what I was gonna say. I was gonna say, like, I wouldn't recommend, like, if anyone has a book coming out, I wouldn't recommend it, but I know that some people have to be burned in order to really get it. So I'm just like, to each his own.
Yeah. I can identify with that. I would probably do it out of nosiness. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to sit up here and act like I wouldn't be scrolling.
Because it's like people are talking about you. Like people are talking about what you created. And like, you're like, it's hard to know that exists, like all these people, and just like ignore it. So yeah, it's definitely nosiness for me too.
Yeah, for sure. And the endorphins that you get when somebody praises your stuff. I mean, that stuff feels so good. Like you said, when you reach a milestone, it's like the best feeling ever. And so we are going to wrap up today's episode. I'm sad because I feel like we homies now and we could talk for days on this subject. Yeah. But sadly, the episode has to come to an end. But before we go, I wanted to know, do you have any projects coming up that we should be looking out for?
So like I can't talk about it, but what I'm working on right now I am very excited about. It's actually it's historical, and it's set in a period that was very artistically fulfilling and iconic for Black people. That's what I will say.
I love that because we need to stop with the trauma stuff, okay? I would love to see us thrive during the times that we thrived, okay? So I'm excited for that. I hate when people say they can't share. I'll be so sad. But it's okay. Keep it to yourself because we will be waiting. And while we are waiting, please follow Ryan on his social media and his website. Can you go ahead and drop both of those for us?
So my Twitter is Ryan Douglas W. My Instagram is Ryan_souffle. That's SOUFLEE. So it's spelled wrong, but I didn't know how to spell souffle. So I just kept it. And then my website is RyanDouglasWriter.com.
I actually like that, souffle. It's kind of how we say it with the Black scent. Souffle, but anyway, I love that.
That's why I thought it was like souffle, but it's one E with an accent.
I love that. Okay, yeah, so totally follow Ryan on his social so you can keep up with what he's doing. If you have not read The Taking of Jake Livingston, please go pick it up and go support this Black writer. Okay, we gotta elevate the people. And then also, speaking of social media, please follow us on Instagram at artofmeorg, on Facebook at Art of Me Productions, on YouTube at Art of Me Productions, and then head over to our website at www.artofme.com. www.thecreativewriting.org. Thank you guys so much for tuning into another episode. We are in season 5, people. Episode 2 is coming your way, and I hope to talk to you soon. Bye.